Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secured retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. I'm the Big Mike, Mike Zlotnik. Today, it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Brett Swartz. Hi, Brett.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Thank you very much for coming on the podcast. So Brett is the, the founder, CEO of Capital Gains Tax Solution. It's one of the podcasts. He's got another podcast. He's out of Sacramento, California. He is one of the United States leading experts on DST, Deferred Sales Trust Solution. And Brett, I'll let you take it from here. Won't you tell us a little bit about you, your family, where you live, about your DST expertise, because we're going to talk about DST most of today.
Absolutely. Well, appreciate it, Mike. You know, most high net worth individuals who own commercial real estate or entrepreneurs, you know, they struggle with capital gains tax when they go to sell their highly appreciated asset. And it could be cryptocurrency, it could be a primary home, could be commercial real estate, could be a failed 1031 exchange. So we use a deferred sales trust to give them some options, you know, give them the opportunity to have some time and some diversification and some liquidity. A little bit about myself. Also, they can create and preserve more wealth. A little bit more about myself. I live in Sacramento. My wife and I, we have five children.
And God bless.
Yeah, we stay busy for sure. I say 100% work and 100% joy. It's kind of a mixed bag there. But great. Their oldest is 10, youngest is 2. So I started out in real estate. Actually, growing up with my dad, I had a love for real estate in the Bay Area, custom homes. I call it the 1980s MC Hammer days. We would go and learn to work hard, tractors, construction, rentals. So it's always kind of been in the blood. And then I had a chance to go and study real estate in college while I was getting a couple degrees and a minor. I actually joined a company called Marcus & Millichap, and I started to learn about investment real estate and on the brokerage side of things. And so I had the ownership kind of from my dad, and then I had learned the brokerage side on that side and how to underwrite a property. But it wasn't always easy, Mike. You know, I was brand new in the business, starting out in 2006. I was newly, I just got going in the business, and then something happened, the 2008 crash. I don't know if you've ever been so scared where you're going, man, how am I going to provide for my family? Is this really the right career or business for me? You know, because it's 100% commission, sink or swim in that kind of business. And that it's also, as you know, commercial real estate can be kind of a long journey to get there. But I kept persevering. And so much so that I got a side job and a side hustle at a place called Cheesecake Factory. And so I always say it's humble beginnings, and I always encourage people to keep pressing through to figure out a way to make it happen. So by day, I'd be working and you know, 40, 50 hour weeks at Marcus & Millichap making cold calls. And by night, I, you know, side hustle to keep my wife and child, you know, with food on the table and be able to pay for rent. And so we did that for about a 2-year period during the 2008 crash. And so I was really scared, but I was persevering. And at that time, I also was able to learn about the Deferred Sales Trust. And this is about 2009. And my business partner now, who's a financial advisor, he's the co-founder of the Deferred Sales Trust. He came into our office in Sacramento and he spoke about this. And like most people, when we listen to this, they have maybe confused it with a Delaware Statutory Trust or a TIC or just another form of a 1031 exchange. But he went on to tell us that it's not that, it's something different. And it can actually solve a lot of the challenges that clients are facing. And so fast forward, I started to implement it into my business. My business started to grow. My wife and I, again, have since had the 4 other children. She's been able to stay home full time with the family. So it wasn't always easy, but it definitely has been rewarding now that all I do is kind of coach, train, and help people close deferred sales trust, or if they're a business professional, help their clients do the same.
Thank you for that wonderful introduction. That's great. I have only 4 kids and a cat. I don't have the fifth child. Well, the cat is the fifth child, but I know how it is in a busy household. Anyway, let's go to the basics of the deferred sales trust. And again, full disclaimer, I'm not an expert in this. I don't play one on TV. You're the expert, and I don't advocate this. I have no idea what it is. I know just the basics about it. I heard about it, and that's why you're the guest and would love to hear what is deferred sales trust. How does it work? Just real basic. Start with the people who have never heard about this. Sure. They know about 1031 exchange. This is supposed to be similar, better? Just let's start with basics.
Yeah, so at the ABCs, right? So at the foundation of the structure, it's just an installment sale or a seller carryback. Your listeners might know of it. It's based upon IRC 453, which is a part of the tax code that allows tax deferral. And so the best way I like to explain it is just giving an example. So if I want to buy Mike's, business for $10 million, let's imagine he owns it, free and clear. If I come to Mike and ask him, hey, Mike, would you carry some paper for me? I'll give you $1 million down for a down payment. Would you carry back, a note for me? And you say yes to that. In that scenario, you've only received $1 million. So you'd pay tax on that. But that other $9 million is in a deferral state. And you don't pay tax on that until and if you receive either payments, which would be ordinary income tax on that, or principal, which you pay tax on. So the essence, it's just an installment sale. The difference is what we do is we actually ask the third-party buyer to simply come with all of the cash. And the trust just jumps in right in between and makes a deal with Mike and says, hey, Mike, the trust will buy it for you for $10 million. In exchange for a full promissory note of $10 million. And we'll ask the buyer to cash out the trust. So it's a little bit different because there's three parties, and that's part of our role. We're the third party unrelated trustee to help make this work and make it keep it legal. But when we do it in that order, it's kind of like a 401k or kind of like an IRA if you think about it, Mike, right? If you have an IRA right now or a 401k or your listeners do, instead of taking those funds to your personal hands and being taxed on that, you can send it to a 401k or an IRA. And those tax vehicles allow some tax deferral. So I like to say we're kind of like a 1031, we're kind of like an IRA, we're kind of like a 401k, but we're a little bit different. But it gives a lot of the same outcomes.
I appreciate that very simple explanation. So, just to recap, if you're selling an appreciated asset, you sell it on an installment sale contract to the trust, and then the trust sells it to whomever wants to buy that asset. So you just come in as an intermediary, and then they essentially put it on a payment plan over what, 10 years, right? Yeah. Is that the right number?
Yeah, typically 10 years, and they can be renewed every 10 years for 10 years and keep renewing. And then you can pass it on inside of your living trust and your kids can step into your shoes and keep it going. And so understanding that this is an installment sale that's going to produce interest, ideally in investments such as real estate or stocks, bonds, mutual funds, or hard money lending or different things like that. And that income that's going to be produced off of it's going to produce a taxable event, right, for the taxpayer. But if it's just interest payments, it'll be ordinary income. If you dip into principal, it'll be capital gains tax. But the idea is just not take it all in 1 year and then it's gone, but to use the funds that you would have paid of tax. Let's say on $10 million, you would have paid $4 million of tax. Let's say you had a zero basis. We're going to use all 10 or keep all of it working for us and think of it like a zero interest loan from the government. The government says, Mike, you owe us that $4 million, but as long as you put it into this deferred sales trust, and as long as the funds are invested in business purpose, which actually is what they like, they want, the government has a tax code to incentivize you for what they want you to do in order to spur the economy, get more tax revenue. So this is a great way to take highly appreciated assets, primary home, investment real estate, cryptocurrency kind of thing, sell them, and then get the money working and creating more jobs and more tax revenue. So hopefully that makes some sense, Mike.
It does, Brett. Thank you. So that money that's sitting in the trust, who makes the decisions where the money is invested, and what can it be invested in? Is this you, the trustee, or first of all, I guess you are the trustee, I assume, or your organization.
Yes. Yes.
And then what about the property owner who sold the property and got, instead of getting the cash, the money is now in the trust? Do they make the decisions, or how does it work?
Great question. So first of all, nothing ever moves without the note holder, the secured lender is what you've become. We're using Mike as a scenario here. Unless Mike, you approve that, that's the movement of the funds. And that's also the movement into investments. So think of it like a lender. If you go to a bank and you say, hey, I want to buy this property, this 100 unit multifamily property. Would you please give me a loan for $7 million? I want to put $3 million down. The bank would say, sure, Mike, I'll give you a loan for that property. Now you need to have, you know, fire insurance. You need to provide, you know, income and expense statements. You need to maintain a certain occupancy. You need to, you know, pay us this monthly amount, you know, based upon this interest rate. So that lender has all of the rights and protections of a lender, and he can approve or disapprove of that investment, right? And so this is the same scenario. In the deferred sales trust, you are the secured lender, so you have all the rights and protections of that, and nothing moves without your approval. Now, that being said, does the trustee also have to approve? I do, right? If I didn't have to approve, then technically you would be in constructive receipt, right? There'd be too close of a barrier. Kind of think of it kind of like a 401k or an IRA company, right? Or even a 1031 exchange company. Those are companies that are a third party unrelated to you, necessary for tax deferral purposes, but they work alongside of what you're looking to do. So it's definitely a team effort. We want what you want, but we got to stay within the guardrails of the deferred sales trust and the tax law of IRC 453.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, if it works similarly to a self-directed IRA where you are the holder of the note, but while the money is sitting at the custodian, you're the beneficiary of the account. You basically tell the self-directed custodian what you'd like to do. And they do, it sounds to me like they do some level of basic review, and you would do some level of review. Is it a suitable type of investment? And is it not prohibited party and all that jazz?
Correct. Exactly. So it's within the framework of what's called the risk tolerance. By the way, everything is mathematical for us. So before the funds go anywhere, before, you know, investments are made, there's a risk tolerance questionnaire filled out by you, Mike. It's a 2-page. There's no wrong answers. But basically that becomes the constitution for how and where the funds are invested. There's a score based upon your answers to the questions. And then an interest rate is assigned, typically around 8%. Okay, compounding over any 10-year period of time, net of the recurring fees, which are about 1.5% per year per se, given you know, kind of where the funds are invested, and then we use that and we say, hey, Mike, this is the risk tolerance questionnaire here that you filled out in the very beginning. So based upon this, here's some allocations, here's some investments, here's some real estate deals. What would you like? And you say, yeah, I think that looks pretty good. That fits. Okay. We think so too. So as a team, we're going to focus on that risk tolerance questionnaire and take a reasonable amount of risk for a reasonable amount of return. It's in all of these things are very, very important. By the way, 25-year track record, thousands of closes, billions under management. And we've proven the system over a dozen no change IRS audits. And so we just have to follow the guardrails. I always say, though, it's like riding a bike, Mike. Most people who are listening to this have never maybe even done an installment, you know, a sale, right? They've never even carried paperback. So they've always rode the bike of ownership, and they're riding this bike and they've gone really fast. And especially the high net worth, successful people we work with, they're expert speed racers. You know, they can ride the Tour de France and they can go, you know, up and down all around. Now this one, they've never rode this bike before. Right. And so it does take, hey, it's a little wobbly at first, but what we really, really value is being the guide for them, you know, come alongside of them, helping them understand the ABCs, right? And realize that once you start doing these deals in this way, all of a sudden you're riding a speed racer with us as well. It might take 6 months or a year, but it definitely takes doing the deal to understand it fully. We try to give as much up front, but there's that barrier of, okay, I've got to jump on the bike and ride to get it. If that makes sense, Mike.
No, it does. It does remind me when most people are used to the traditional investments, the Wall Street, the stocks and bonds, and when they go to self-directed custodian, they take their IRA to self-directed. There's only a small percentage of people are there because, first of all, there's a barrier to entry. Two, it's the inertia of, again, riding the bike, certain type of bike, the Wall Street, and not doing anything else. Mm-hmm. And for sure, this is a little bit more advanced. So I have a couple of quick questions.
Sure.
When I was a guest on your podcast, we chatted about this, or maybe after that, but I wanted to ask for the audience. So what's the smallest amount of money people is worth for people to pay your fees, basically when they sell an asset? How much capital gain do they realize, and how much net proceeds should they have, a minimum amount?
Sure. We'll start with fees, and I'll give you the minimum. So the fees are basically 1.5% of the gross sales price is a one-time fee to the DST tax attorneys. Okay. So they're my business partners. They're the brain surgeons, and they're really, really doing the surgery of the actual transaction. So that's all of the legal work. It also includes the IRS audit defense, which is very important. If you're ever looking at a brand new strategy such as this or anything else that's out there, you want to ask a series of questions such as how long has it been around? How many IRS audits? But most importantly, how many of those audits did you actually defend for your actual clients and what were the outcomes?
How many? Have you been part of and how many have you defended and successfully?
Yeah. So the DST tax attorneys who are the brain surgeons, over a dozen no change IRS audits. Okay. All of them were no change. In fact, one of the biggest ones was a $125 million deal in California and it was a big commercial property and that was a no change audit. And so that's very, very important to understand because Mike, if you and I got an audit right now on our personal tax returns or our deals, we might have a receipt here. We might have something missed here. You know, that might be a little bit off and they would probably have a change on our audit. But in all of these transactions, they're literally batting 1,000, meaning not one single issue. Okay. And so that's part of why they provide IRS DST audit defense for the life of the trust, which is included there. And so they stand behind their work. Also, everything is conditional, meaning we don't charge anything in this unless and if you do the deal and the deal actually closes. And so we do all the legal work, all the preparation, all the education, all up front. And for some reason your deal doesn't close or for some reason you don't want to use it. No problem. Like you don't owe us anything really. We try to take the pressure off. That's how confident we are in what we do and how we do it. And the last part would be this, that you don't want to go with a group that has pending litigation. Okay. So if there's like pending unresolved litigation, or if they've never faced the IRS, that's not good. You want to make sure that the IRS has seen it, looks at it, has done the audits, has gone through it. There's also been 3 formal promoter reviews, which is also really unique as well. All of those were no change as well. So they looked at the entire structure and they looked at individuals in the deferred sales trust. And those are all no change as well. So all that being said, what's the minimum deal size? Okay, well, we found that to make this make sense, you need about $1 million at least of gain on the asset and at least $1 million net proceeds. If you don't have those two, then the fee of the 1.5% up front, and there's an ongoing fee of about 1.5% for the accounts under management.
Per year, right?
It's a recurring fee, right? And so that includes the financial advisor, that includes the trustee fee. Okay. There's miscellaneous fees of tax return, as well as we use a bank and they provide what's called deposit account control agreement. They're a $1 billion bank and the funds, they're like a long-term escrow, you know, kind of like if you do a deal and you put your funds into escrow, they're protecting that until the parties agree to sign and release the funds. So that's what they perform. So that's that with the tax returns are about $3,000 per year or so. So you got to make sure the liability is big enough, right? So on a $1 million gain, let's just use 40% on average, depending on the depreciation recapture in the state in which you're in. Well, that's $400,000. So we say, okay, Mike, you got $1 million in there. We just helped you save, you know, defer $400,000. We use the rule of 72. We always go back to the mathematics and the underwriting of the model. And we say, okay, what would it take, Mike, to double that $1 million? The rule of 72 states 10 years if we can earn 7% compounding net of recurring fees. Well, hopefully we're going to earn 8 net of recurring fees, you know, earn about 9.5, 10. And so we say, okay, so Mike, if you did nothing with the funds and you just let it compound, guess what your $1 million would be in 10 years? It would be 2, right? And if you do that again, another 10 years would be 2 would be 4, okay? Now you're going to live off some of the interest or take some of the interest, right, as you receive it. And as you receive it, you'll pay ordinary income tax on that. But a lot of our clients will make interest-only payments. So structure the notes in a way that keeps that extra $400 working for you. Remember, it's a zero interest loan from the government. The government wants you to do this because they want you to A, sell the asset, which gets the real estate commission for the person, gets new property tax for that property, gets the escrow paying tax, and gets your money going to work for them to and for you to create more jobs, creates more tax revenue. This is also why we are a big proponent that the 1031 exchange stay intact, because it's actually a really good thing for the economy. It's good to get developers and owners of real estate to go on to the next deal and build more jobs, more housing, more apartments, right? And you take those incentives away, people don't sell. People won't do deals, right? And so these are good things for us, the deferred sales trust and the 1031.
Yeah, it's a great insight there. What is DST Plus? You mentioned it on your podcast. I'm just curious, what is DST Plus? How does that work? We chatted before, does that save? So in the traditional DST, you just defer the capital gains, But in the DST Plus, somehow you are able to defer the depreciation that should be recaptured upon a sale.
Yeah. So there's some. First of all, when you work with us, we do sign NDAs, and so there's some things I can talk about and some things I can't on, especially on air here. But essentially, we use the DST Plus for larger deals, okay? Larger transactions. And an installment sale, IRC 453, you're limited to $5 million per person per year, okay? So if it's a married couple, $10 million. So for deals that are larger than that, we're using something called a DST Plus, okay? And without, getting into the proprietary nature of this, there are ways to defer, depreciation recapture, as long as you don't have what's called a mortgage over basis, right? Your debt over basis. That's something that we would have to replace. And we have a solution for that. We do a bifractured 1031 exchange, which is a partial 1031 into what's called a Delaware statutory trust, where we have a high LTV deal. We just did a deal last week with this, and it's about a 15% down payment to replace the debt over basis. And then the remainder can go into the trust. Okay. So we kind of have to map that out. But the beauty of the DST Plus also is that it removes funds outside the taxable estate. Okay, so there's no limit to the amount it can go, and it moves funds outside the taxable estate. So, for example, Mike, if a couple is worth, let's say, $100 million, okay, and let's imagine all $100 million inside of their taxable estate. Well, as the laws stand right now, essentially, if you die and your spouse dies and all of it's inside of your taxable estate, there's about a $22 million exemption if you're a U.S. citizen, if you're married, and then about $12 million if you're single. However, those are set to expire in 2025, and we believe they'll probably be in half, if not even lower. We'll see what happens there. But assume it stays at $22 million right now. Well, about $78 million would still be inside of your taxable estate. Well, the IRS will take 40% of that, no matter what your stepped-up basis is, and it has nothing to do with that estate tax. So what we would love about the DST Plus is we can move the funds outside the taxable estate, okay? And we can defer the capital gains tax, and that's a beautiful thing. Now, back to your other point, let's talk about depreciation. Well, the neat part about the deferred sales trust and not the 1031 exchange is we get what's called a brand new depreciation schedule if and when you are an active buyer of real estate in partnership with your trust, okay? And when you do that and do it in the order that we set up and make sure you're following the guardrails, you can buy new real estate and get a new depreciation schedule. And the best way to explain this is a deal that happened in 2006. This gentleman sold a property for about $20 million. And he's a high net worth client. And he was looking around and said, look, I love investment real estate, but right now the prices are too high. I do not want to do a 1031 exchange. And he's worth a couple $100 million. He's really successful. And he said, you know what? I'm going to put in the deferred sales trust. And let's see if this thing, how it goes. Puts it in there for the first time. And then 5 years later, Mike, the bank calls him and says, hey, you know that property you sold 5 years ago? He says, yeah. He goes, well, we just foreclosed on it. And we're just curious if you would be interested in buying it back. And he said, well, maybe. What's the price? And he said, well, 60 cents on the dollar. He said, okay, so I sold high and I can buy low. He used the funds from his trust, put it into the LLC, and he bought it. And he bought it with the brand new depreciation schedule in partnership with the trust. And so I heard that story, and this is what changed it for me. I said, wow, I've been in real estate all my life. I've done 1031 exchanges. I've seen the pain and frustration with the sell high, buy higher forced. I call it the forced shotgun wedding, right? Mike, you ever get engaged in 45 days to somebody and then get married? Well, that you can be very careful with that, right? You could put yourself in hot water. And that's unfortunately what happened in the 08 crash. I saw friends, family, and clients lose half, or lose everything because partly because they had too much debt and because of the exchange rules of equal or greater value, equal or greater debt within 180 days. And they're all stuck on this 1031, I call it these 1031 debt race, right? You're always buying more or you can even say overpaying race. And that's not the way to do it. Our parents taught us to sell high and buy low. They didn't teach us to sell high and buy higher 180 days later with more debt on properties that don't necessarily cash flow and cap rates that don't make any sense with an old depreciation schedule. So I liken the 1031 to the old Blockbuster. I don't know if you remember going to Blockbuster and, on a Friday night and there was the movie there and you're about to grab it and then it's gone, right? And you're like, whoa, my movie's gone because someone grabbed it. And you had to drive in the snow and you had to park and you had to get out and you had to wait in line. But then all of a sudden, a thing called Netflix came along and Netflix says, hey, forget about waiting in line. The movie's never checked out. Forget about having to return it in 3 days. Yeah, there's some ongoing fees, monthly fees, but we're going to make it much more convenient for you. Well, that's how we like to say the deferred sales trust. You have unlimited timing. You don't have to put it into anything in a short period of time. You can also diversify. You can put it into multiple product types. You don't have to get an old depreciation schedule, and you don't have to keep it inside of your taxable estate. So when you understand these things and look at the track record, we like to say, why would you ever use Blockbuster ever again? Now, you might find a deal that makes sense, Mike, and buy more power to you. If you find a great deal, do that 1031 exchange. But realize the 1031 exchange is very limited. It only works for investment real estate. In fact, Biden's thinking about taking away the 1031 altogether. Trump was no hero either. He also limited the 1031 to just investment real estate. So there's cryptocurrency owners that are listening to this. There's primary homeowners. There's business owners. We've done veterinarians, dentists, optometrists. There's people who have other assets that they're selling and they want to defer the tax, artwork, collectibles, but they don't have the Netflix. They're stuck with the Blockbuster, which doesn't even work for a lot of them. So I'll pause there. I know I said a whole lot.
Yeah, that was a lot, quite a bit. So what I extracted is this is certainly an advanced technique for high net worth folks. It is not for an average Joe. It needs to be used for a couple of reasons. One, there's a complexity here involved. So that the higher the dollar amount, the more complexity comes in. Obviously, you guys are collecting the fees. It's almost like, I mean this with all due respect, 1.5% of upfront, 1.5% as you go. Basically, it's like putting a money into a fund. Like we have a fund, we charge 2% management fee, 1% asset acquisition fee in a growth fund. So it's a similar concept where basically working with you to move the money forward into future investments. What I do like is the fact that people have asked me, can I 1031 into one of your funds? And the answer is you cannot. We're not tenants in common. But I guess if they go through a DST, it sounds to me they could write a portion of their, the funds that they rolled over into one or more of our funds and do other things with their money. So from that perspective, it sounds, gives them flexibility. So.
And diversification, right? That's really
important. Yeah. Diversification is the key. Right.
Market is so high. Our clients want liquidity, diversification to be out of debt. Right. And when you can do that, you can preserve your wealth in a marketplace that who knows how long this thing's going to last. I feel like we're kind of on thin ice with how much money the feds are just pumping into the economy. You know more about that than me, but I just remember the 08 crash and I'm just going, wow, what would we have done? We would have sold high in 06. We would have put everything into the deferred sales trust. We would have paid off all of our debt and we would put in conservative liquid investments. Okay. And we would have just waited on the sidelines. Right. And then when the market crashed, we would have bought properties at 50 cents, 40 cents, 30 cents, or probably more like 70 cents, 60 cents, 50 cents on the dollar. Right. All tax deferred. And that's what we're telling you that is already been proven for 25 years, thousands of closes. But guess what, Mike? Your commercial real estate broker doesn't want you to know about this. And neither do 1031 exchange companies, most of them. Right. Because they're in the business of the 1031. They're in the business of keeping you going on those. So that's, I'm a commercial real estate broker. I love commercial real estate. I've done Delaware Statutory Trust and 1031s, of course, do deferred sales trust. The key is just knowing your options and then putting a line down the piece of paper and say, what is best for me? Do I want no debt, no new depreciation schedule, diversification, liquidity, go back into real estate whenever I want? Or do I want to stay in debt, stay in my property, stay in the toilets, trash, and liability, old depreciation schedule? And when you start to actually look at it, you go, this is very clear, right? I just need to take the step, get a guide like us. We'll guide you every step of the way. By the way, bring your trusted advisors in. We work with national law firms. We have thousands of business partners across the U.S. We work with large banks. The funds are held at TD Ameritrade, one of the largest banks in investment groups in the world. So we have all of that in place. One of the guys, actually, it's on our internal team. You heard of PIMCO, Mike, right? There's five guys from PIMCO that were kind of the main guys, Bill Gross and four other guys, and they ran this, big fund, very respected. Well, they all retired like 14 years ago, but four of the five got back together. And now those four of the five started a group called Anfield Capital. And guess what? Anfield Capital can manage the funds. These are some of the smartest money managers in the world with amazing track records over 20, 30 years in the business. And they're a part, and they've done their due diligence on us. So there's a lot of big groups that have looked at it, seen it, and are using it. But we encourage you to come learn more because the water's really warm and it's really fun to help clients who are looking to get out of capital gains tax and defer it.
Thank you for the wisdom and the the commentary. How would folks find you? What's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yes, two places. So the first one is capitalgainstaxsolutions.com, and you can also search that on YouTube and Facebook. So capitalgainstaxsolutions.com. And then the second one is experttaxsecrets.com, and that's more geared towards the business professional. So a financial advisor, commercial real estate syndicator, you know, luxury home realtor, you know, commercial real estate broker, business broker. So you can go to experttaxsecrets.com. You can learn how to use the deferred sales trust to grow your business. So that'd be the second one. The first one is capitalgainstaxsolutions.com.
Thank you very much for sharing. Really appreciate you coming on the podcast. And let's keep chatting. Thank you very much, and have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to bigmikefund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing, Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.